हरिः
सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीहाद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 24. Inert matter is undoubtedly energy with potential to interact, but it has no initiative of its own. Srimad Bhagavatam therefore comments on the aphorism Janmadyasya by saying Abhigya Swarat. In other words, the Supreme Brahman is not inert matter, but he is Supreme Consciousness and is independent. Because right? Otherwise, the idea is that Brahman will be just being unchangeable and having no qualities, then is inert. Yes?
So this interaction happens from the level of Brahman?
Yes.
It's the inert
matter? Yes, because, see, is Krishna's, the inert matter is, how do you say, the external energy. But Brahman, being transcendental, then has qualities, right? And so that's the internal quality, internal potency. So that internal potency, then that transformation of that is then what makes the matter function. You know, like we were. What was it? Like the division that's given that you have the material cause, and then I think it was the efficient cause as Maya herself. Like that. So she's a person, but she is in charge of the material, of the energy that is inert. Right? So in other words, you have just as you would have the natural, you would have the conscious matter in the spiritual world. So then you would naturally have the unconscious matter. Right? So then as the Sarup Shakti takes the form of Yogamaya to control the conscious matter, and the form of Mahamaya to control the inert matter. Right? But she herself is not inert matter, right? Because sometimes we may think that Maya herself is that matter, but no, she's who's in charge of it. Like that. So then she's making it happen. So that's that transformation will be happening at the level of Brahman. Because Krishna does not contact anything but his internal potency. He only interacts directly with her. Then she transforms into Maya, who then controls the inert matter. Yeah? So then here's that Bhagavatam saying that this Abhigya Swarat means Brahman is not inert, but is, here's what it's called, Supreme Consciousness and Independent. Therefore, inert matter cannot be the ultimate cause of the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the material world. Superficially, material nature appears to be the cause of creation, maintenance, and destruction. But material nature is set into motion for creation by the Supreme Conscious Being, the Personality of Godhead. The material nature is one of the energies of the Lord, and she can work under the direction of the Lord. Adyakshena. When the Lord throws his transcendental glance over the material nature, then only can the material nature act, as a father contacts the mother, who is then able to conceive a child. Although it appears to the layman that the mother gives birth to the child, the experienced man knows that the father gives birth to the child. The material nature therefore produces the moving and standing manifestation of the where is material world?
Under the light.
No,
it's the...
Of the ma.
It's the... No.
Continuation.
The
ah, okay. I was sitting there going, ma-da. That doesn't work. Okay. Of the material world. Oh, I like it. These pages are almost all footnotes. I think there's one in Brahma Samhita. There's one sentence on the top and the rest of it's all footnotes. Okay, the material nature therefore produces the moving and standing manifestation of the material world after being contacted by the Supreme Father and not independently. Right? So we even see in just the general society. You know, I mean, just your how people just do is that the child takes on the family position of the father. You know, because what it's saying here is this: actually, the child is from the father. Right? So that makes sense. It's just it is brought to the point of being able to move around in human society by contact with the mother. So that combination, but it's actually a manifestation of the father. Right? So that therefore it's natural. Just you say this is the son of. So in the same way is that the manifestation of the material nature is actually coming from Krishna. Okay. So that makes sense. Considering material nature to be the cause of creation, maintenance, etc., is called the logic of nipples on the neck of a goat. The Chaitanya Charitamrita by Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes this logic of Ajagala Sthana Nyaya as follows, as explained by His Divine Grace Sri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj. The material nature, as the material cause, is known as Pradhan. And as the efficient cause is known as Maya. But since it is inert matter, it is not the remote cause of creation. Kaviraj Goswami states as follows. CC Adi Lila 561. Ata eva Krishna mula jagat karana prakriti karana jaiche aja gala stana. Because Karana Vashayi Vishnu. Yeah, that one's not used so often, but that one's a standard one. Is a plenary expansion of Krishna. It is he who electrifies the matter to put it in motion. The example of electrification is quite appropriate. A piece of iron is certainly not fire, but when the iron is made red hot, certainly it has the quality of fire, though through its burning capacity. Matter is compared to the piece of iron, and it is electrified or made red hot by the glance or manipulation of the Supreme Consciousness of Vishnu. Only by such electrification is the energy of matter displayed in various actions and reactions. Therefore, the inert matter is neither efficient nor the material cause of the cosmic manifestation. Sri Kapila Deva said, Srimad Bhagavatam 3:28-40, the original fire, its flame, its sparks, and its smoke are all one, for fire is still fire, yet is different from the flame. Flame is different from sparks. Sparks are different from the smoke. In every one of them, namely in the flames, in the sparks, and in the smoke, the integrity of fire is present, yet all of them are differently situated with different positions. Right? So all of Krishna's energies, Krishna and all his energies, all his manifestations, they're all Krishna, but they're differently situated, right? So, because we're not looking at things from the spiritual platform, we're not looking at that aspect. We're distinguishing the position of the jiva because the jiva does not understand this, right? The jiva is an illusion that the jiva thinks I am the totality. Rather than, no, we are the sparks of the fire. Right? But Krishna is the fire. So he's the totality of everything. We just happen to be part of that. Yes.
It says here that nature is not the material cause.
Yes, means from this point. Means we're saying here is that she's the material cause, the pradhan, then Maya is the efficient cause, but then Krishna is the remote cause. So we can understand that actually it's because of Krishna that material energy is functioning. So technically, then the material energy is not the efficient or the remote cause. I mean, the efficient or the material cause. Does that make sense? But as far as working goes, she's doing that work. But the potency for doing that is coming from Krishna. Like electricity is there, so the thing functions. So you can say, as yes, the machine is doing the blending, or the machine is making the things cold. But actually, it's the electricity that's doing it, and that actually it's the generator that's doing it.
In this way, Krishna would be also Krishna. In this efficient cause, would be also Krishna.
In this last one, then you would say yes, he's the efficient.
So he's remote and he's inefficient.
Yes, but also Maya is the efficient, and we're the efficient.
And pradhan is the material cause?
Pradhan is the material cause. You know, it's just a matter of which aspect you're looking at. So, in other words, Krishna is the efficient cause because he's the one that's actually the potency behind, who is the source of the potency that everything is happening, right? It's actually being carried out by Maya. So in this way, she's the efficient cause because she, on behalf of the Lord, is fulfilling his desire and getting the work done. Right? The Jiva is called the efficient cause because he thinks he's doing it. So we're the only the efficient cause from our perspective. Right? Because in the colloquial sense, then the living entity is doing something. Like, lunch is made. We say, who cooked lunch? But actually the jiva didn't do anything. The jiva only desired, and then by the grace of the Lord, then the material, then Maya, she manipulates the pradhan so that lunch gets cooked. But because our consciousness is there that I did this, we get the credit for that. Right? So in this way then we become the efficient cause. But in actuality we're not. So it's just a matter of what level you're looking at, approach angle you're looking at. Does that make sense? Okay. Yeah. So the formal cause that we would say, right, which is the internal potency, then when that transforms into external, that's the material cause. But within that material cause, we have the aspect of Maya herself, who's controlling, and then Pradhan, which is then, adjusting according to the laws. Does that make sense? Yeah. And so, it's actually Krishna. We can be an instrument in that. But if we're not an instrument, it means we can only be an instrument, but it's a matter, do we identify ourselves as an instrument, or do we identify ourselves as the one who's doing it? If we identify as the one who's doing it, then the whole point of the original cause and the formal cause disappears because we're the cause. Right? And so we don't even attribute anything to Maya herself and the modes, anything like that. We just think, I'm doing it. And therefore, that's why there's karma. Since you say you're doing it, then, you get the result. Because you can't just say, I'm doing it, and then get the benefit. You also have to, if you're doing it, you also have to get the, be responsible. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, yes.
So, if somebody says who cooked lunch, we say, I was just the instrument.
It depends upon what's the context. They're just wanting to know who was the one involved with the lunch, and you say, you cooked it.
It's a matter of consciousness, how we have consciousness.
Yes. Yes. But we're an instrument on all sides. In other words, if it comes out good, we're an instrument. If it comes out bad, we're an instrument. like that. Not that when it's good, then we did it, and when it's bad, then we're only an instrument. Like that. That's also important. The cosmic manifestation is compared to the smoke, because when smoke passes over the sky, so many forms appear, resembling many known and unknown manifestations. The sparks are compared to living entities, and the flames are compared to material nature, pradhan. One must know that each and every one of them is effective because simply because of being empowered by the quality of the original fire. Therefore, all of them, namely the material nature, the cosmic manifestation, and the living entities, are but different energies of the Lord, fire. Therefore, those who accept the material nature as the cosmic manifestation's original cause, prakriti, the cause of creation according to Shankya philosophy, are not correct in their conclusion. The material nature has no separate existence without the Lord. Therefore, setting aside the Supreme as the cause of all causes is the logic of ajagala stananyaya, or trying to milk the nipples on the neck of a goat. The nipples on the neck of a goat may seem like sources of milk, but try to get milk from such nipples will be foolish. Srimad Bhagavatam 2:10:45. Right? So we can see is all of them are efficient in that they're all empowered by the Lord. Right? So does that make sense? So you have the efficient cause is Krishna, but because he empowers his energies, therefore things are seeming to be happening without him involved. In that way, in other words, he's the efficient cause because of him it's all happening. But for our vision, we don't see that because in this way he's the remote cause. Because the material manifestation, then the living entities, and what was the last one? Therefore, all of them, namely the material nature, the cosmic manifestation, the living entities. Then all three of them, then they are have the potency to accomplish things. Right? Therefore, then, depending on how it is, Maya is the efficient cause, the living entity is the efficient cause. Right? So that's the whole point. And then the material cause is able to function. Right? Otherwise, how does it transform? Unless it's empowered by the Lord. Because we see in the beginning of the creation, then when the pradhan was separated into the Mahatattva, then the primordial demigods were unable to do anything with it because none of the atoms would go together. Right? So Krishna has to enter it so that the atoms can go together, come apart, and be transformed into different shapes and forms, because you have 8,400,000 forms. So they have to be able to be transformed. So then the material energy itself is then empowered. Right? So in this way, then all of these are efficient cause. So depending upon what we're looking at, the context, then we'll be placing about efficient cause. But these are all causes, but the cause of all these causes is Krishna. Right? Does this make sense? Right. So we're trying to establish that, because you have to remove the point that the living entity comes from a material nature. Right? Because all material thought will be in that line. Right? Only actually Vaishnava thought, then it comes from. Does that make sense? Okay. Then, on this side... So it ended there. The words Bhuma and Atma refer primarily or directly, Mukhya Vritti, to the Lord, since etymologically they mean all-pervading. This is also the conclusion of Sutras 1.3.7 and 1.4.19. The word... Okay, so here you have Mukhya and you have Gona. So Mukhya will mean the primary. Gona will be the secondary. It means it's supportive of the Mukhya. Does that make sense? So it's always this will be applied into various situations, like books. You have Mukhya and Gona. So Mukhya means the whole book is important. Gona means there's sections of the book, or even if it's the whole book, it's in support of the book that's Mukhya. Does that make sense?
But it's confusing because the Atma also refers to the soul in the sense that the soul pervades, is all pervading in the body.
Yes, the soul is all pervading in the body, but the supreme soul is pervading all bodies.
Yeah.
So since we're working on the Brahman kind of concept of that all-pervading, all-knowing kind of thing, then we have to take it up to the higher principle.
Yeah.
Like that. Otherwise, then it'll be contradictory.
Because
if we say it's the soul, but if there's no substance, why are we even discussing it in the first place? So the whole idea that they even have a philosophy, according to themselves, is totally bogus. That they have mutts, that they have their sannyasis, they have their, you know, rituals and their conventions, it's all totally bogus. Because it's all illusion. Why would they be doing it? So even trying to be sannyasis, calling each other Narayan, sitting around discussing Vedanta is totally bogus, according to them. So the whole point is that something becomes of value because it's about Brahman. So it must be about Brahman that it's discussing.
Mm-hmm.
So Brahman must be the source of all this. Otherwise, why is it there?
Mm-hmm.
But as Brahman is unchanging, it can't be Brahman that's transformed.
Mm-hmm.
So it can't be Brahma Parinamabhad. It has to be Shakti. Is the Brahman's energy is what transforms. Because then there's some meaning to their life.
Yeah.
But then there's no meaning to their philosophy. Right? If their philosophy has meaning, then there's no meaning of their life. Right? You know, like that. But if you accept our philosophy, then there's some meaning to their life, but just their philosophy becomes bogus. So better they live their life, accept our philosophy. Okay. The word Brahman applies to the Lord only because etymologically it means someone possessing unlimited great qualities. The Vedas say, Ata kasmad uchyate brahmeti brihanto yasmin guna. Why is he called Brahman? In him are infinitely expanding qualities. Bri means to make big. Therefore, the word Brahman primarily signifies the Lord. Right, so it's not that Brahman doesn't signify the jiva also, or the material energy, but it's primarily is the Supreme Lord. But here we also notice it is bringing out qualities, expanding qualities, unlimited qualities. Like that. So the Mayavadis say the Brahman's nirguna, without quality, but they do accept some qualities. You know, unlimited, you know, like this. All-pervading, you know, a few qualities, then they go for it. But they'll say he's without quality, so it doesn't really make sense. So the point is if it's a few and it's unlimited, why wouldn't there be unlimited quality? So by other etymological definitions, that works better. The word is also employed to refer to others, since they possess the qualities of the Lord in part, just as the word king sometimes is used for the kingly person. Okay, so in this way, then, we can also refer to, that's how jivas as Brahman, material energy as Brahman, is because they possess small quantity of the qualities that Krishna has. So that's what makes them Brahman. Krishna is unlimited, but we're limited. But the qualities that we have are like Brahman, just like if you take, you know, a drop of water out of the ocean, you'll still call it ocean, but it's only a drop. You know, but if you think that if you foolishly think the drop and the whole ocean themselves are the same, are equal in quantity, that would be foolish. Okay. So that's how we get called Brahman, because of having the qualities of Krishna, not that we're Brahman on our own. You know, just as it mentions, you have the flames, you have the smoke, you have the sparks, but they're all part of the fire.
It's just like the word Bhagavan sometimes is used to refer to saintly person.
Yes, Bhagavan refers to saintly person sometimes because they have the qualities that you see Krishna manifest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, in a nice quantity that you would say it's there. You know, just like, okay, You know, 10 pice is money. But someone having 10 pice, we don't call them rich. But it's still money. So it's only when there's a certain volume then we'll do that. So the devotees, they're able to manifest that volume of qualities. Not like the Lord, but in pursuance of the Lord, therefore they're given that, they may be given that title. Yeah. For their highest benefit, the jivas, inundated by the three modes, should inquire about the Supreme Lord, who is endowed with an ocean of compassion for those who surrender to Him. The Supreme Lord alone is the object of inquiry, right? Not the jiva. Because if you only inquire about the jiva, you will not get all a complete understanding. But if you inquire about the Supreme, then you get the whole thing. In other words, if I inquire about fire, then I get all the aspects of the flame, the smoke, and the sparks. But if I just inquire about the jiva, I'm not going to get very far. Because where does the jiva come from? What's their position? I can't answer any of that. But if I know about the Lord, and I know about His energies, then I can know everything. Right? So that's the mistake. The impersonalist is that if they approach only Brahman, but then there's no quality. So therefore, without energies, where does the jiva come from? So you can't even answer the question, who am I? Does that make sense? They can't actually say that. You know, if you say you're illusion, but where does the illusion come from? So that they can't answer either. So technically, the impersonalist cannot answer the question, who am I? Yes?
So they can't answer sutra,
no.
About Brahman,
yes.
So
yes.
About
no. And even if they're looking at it about then, is okay. Now what? Even if it's time to inquire about the living entity, but then what are you going to do with it? How you'll answer what the living entity is? Because according to them, the living entity doesn't exist. So why would you inquire about something that doesn't exist?
I was thinking that they could answer that there is a Kacha Brahman and a Paka Brahman, which is most mature and then gets the mature.
But the point is then there's distinction. And in Brahman there's no distinction, so you can't actually have Kacha and Paka Brahman.
It's like that the example was the mango. Still it is a mango, but it's not right or right.
But still you can distinguish. But they say there's no distinguishing. So that's the problem, is their own philosophy doesn't allow to answer any questions. If they're true to their philosophy, but because they're mental speculators, then according to the position that you're asking, they will switch their own position and answer that, though there's no consistency between the positions that they use. You know, it's that, you know, yeah, it's they just jump around. It's a standard technique, you know, people use. You just switch the position accordingly. Yeah, so they do that. So that's why you can only get real answers from the absolute truth Himself, from Krishna. So what He says and what His servants say, right, what the Shastras say, that's real, and anything else is speculation. So if it's not based on the Shastra, then it's speculation. You know, and if you base your speculation on someone else's speculation, it's still speculation. You know, so therefore we can't use material scholars, you know, academics, scientists, you know, these Mayavadis, we can't use their position either, because being speculative can't give us answers. One cannot say that the qualities are imposed on the Lord, since the inquiry is concerning Brahman, who really has these qualities. Inquiry, jigyasa, means the desire to know. Knowledge is of two types, paroksha and aparoksha. Vijnana, pragyanam, kuravita. Knowing Him, realize Him. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4:4:42. The latter, aparoksha, is to achieve Him. The first, paroksha, is the means. This will be made clear later. It is also said, Vijnanam Brahma. Know the jiva as Brahman. This means that knowing the sarupa of the jiva is helpful to understanding the Lord. One should not accept that the jiva and Brahman are the same, since the scriptures insist on the difference of the jiva and the Lord as explained in sutras 1.1.16, 1.1.17, 1.3.15, 1.3.21, and 1.3.41. It is concluded there that even in the state of liberation, the two remain separate. Okay, so you know, so knowing the sarupa of the jiva is useful in knowing the Lord, because then you know who you are. You know your position. Like that. So this paroksha and aparoksha, the paroksha is the means. Paroksha is what you hear from others. And aparoksha means what you experience. So what you realize. Right? So that's coming from the Lord. These are all the different levels of gaining knowledge. Right? You have the sensual, prakrita, then paroksha, what you hear from others, aparoksha, what's experienced, Adhokshaja, where he descends into things, and then aprakrita, which is transcendental. So you have the five levels of consciousness. You also have the five levels of gaining knowledge. Like that. Sorry? No, it's probably one of them is Prakrita. What is it called? Pratyaksha.
Which one is the first?
Pratyaksha.
The lowest.
What means what? What you understand with your senses. So someone on Anamoy understands things only with their senses. Right? Paroksha means is that I understand from others, right? Because all it's about, Pranamoy is always about just what, as a group, what everybody accepts as fact. Right? Then aparoksha means that which is experienced or like that. So that's from following Dharma, then you get the experience of what it is. Right? Then Adhokshaja, that goes with Vijnanamoy, right? So that means then the Lord descends into the things, then we can understand how the Lord is pervading everything, how He's in everything. You can perceive that, right? And then Aprakrita means the transcendental, Anandamoy.
Here's that. Another one is Divya Pratyaksha.
Divya Pratyaksha. Yes. Well, I mean, when you get to these higher platform, then you see from that platform. Just like it said, you hear Shabda, then through Anuman you try to apply it into the situation you're in. So when you can actually see it, right, then, you know, in Pratyaksha, then you can say you've realized it. So if it's just something from the scriptures and then you're seeing, you know, the mundane aspect, but it's based on Shastra, you know, so that's pious, but it'll just be Pratyaksha. But if it's connected to the Lord and seeing the Lord, how He's involved, then that would be Divya Pratyaksha. You know, so that there's a difference made there. Is only?
Like,
but you use the word pratyaksha.
Like pratyaksha, like in Bhagavad Gita, it said that you get direct perception of the self realization, but it wasn't sure if it's only.
Yes, but that's what Prabhu was talking about in the Divya. Mm-hmm. You understand? The Divya. Okay. Then Bhagavatam verses. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.1. My Lord, Sri Krishna, son of Vasudeva, O all-pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. I meditate upon Lord Sri Krishna because he is the absolute truth and the primeval cause of all causes of the creation, sustenance, and destruction of the manifested universes. He is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations. and he is independent because there is no other cause beyond him. It is he only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge unto the heart of Brahmaji, the original living being. By him, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion. As one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire or land seen on water. Only because of him do the material universes, temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of nature, appear factual. Right? Because although they are unreal, right? They appear factual because they have his potency. That's the part that we think is real about illusion. But because we don't see it in connection with him, that it's his qualities, his potencies, that's the illusion. Right? But if we see it that way, then we're not dealing with illusion. Right? That's the whole point. That's why the devotees, they can be following the whole Varnashram program. And but they see is that the potency of it and the positions of it is all Krishna. And why it works is because of Krishna. And so since something has to be done to express the affection between the living entity and the Lord, the living entity, is there has to be an activity. Therefore, why not use the best possible activity to do that? Does that make sense? You know, it would be like saying, okay, let's say you came from a background that wasn't so, how you say, facilitated. Okay? And let's say, so the things that you have aren't very good. You know, like the shoes, maybe they have some holes in them and stuff like that. Or, you know, whatever you have, it's not very good quality. So then you have the opportunity now, having come in contact with and understanding that there's better quality stuff. And so to do the work that would generally require better quality stuff. Then you say, no, but I've come from this, you know, unfortunate background, and so therefore I'd rather use the shoes with the holes in it. Does that make sense? Yeah. That's our modern day philosophies. Right? So we have to be very, very careful, is that the potency of things, why they work, is Krishna. Because of that, that's why we choose the better quality things. Because it's for Krishna, the methods are Krishna, the things are used are Krishna, because it's all his potency. And preferring to not use those because we feel more comfortable because of the other thing, because then it's about us and our satisfaction. It's not actually about the Lord. It may sound like devotional service, but actually it's not. Yes.
Can we say that those better quality things are manifesting more of the Lord's potencies or higher qualities of the Lord?
Yes, they have more of the potency qualities of the Lord. That's why they are more efficient.
Yeah.
But we're attached to less efficient because, you know, that's what we're used to.
Yeah.
But the point is it doesn't work very good. You know, in other words, if nothing else is available, of course you use the lesser quality. But to claim that the lesser quality is the same as the higher quality, then why are we doing that? Because we're not looking at it from the Lord's perception. We're not looking at it from devotion. We're looking at it, I'm more comfortable with this. The higher quality stuff doesn't make me very comfortable. Therefore, since my comfort is you know, primary here, therefore I will say that this is, you know, more important, but since people may not buy that the modern is more important than the Vedic, at least I can say that they're equal. And then I'll even take it a step further in saying what we call Vedic is actually just Indian. And so since India is just a country, and the West, you know, is made up of countries, therefore they're equal. You understand? So the whole point is it's about ourselves. It's not about the Lord. Because the point is if there was something better available, why wouldn't we use it? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's just like that. Because if you try to use that principle in relationships, you'll fail miserably. You know what I'm saying? You know, the man is very happy just using, you know, some simple thing and getting it done. He is quite happy. But if he, but the wife is not. She would prefer the other thing. So then if you use that lesser thing, what would be your reason for it? It's not about the other person. You know? You could say, no, but what about the devotion? It's all about the devotion. How many times can he pull off using the lesser thing, you know, with a very nice affection, and she'll buy it? Because at some point is, okay, but why are you holding on to, why is there an attachment to that secondary aspect that is favorable to him and not to her? Right? Because of his own. So a couple of times it may get by, but you can't claim that every time you're going to use this and it's just as good. You know what I'm saying? So we're talking some major flaws here. This is the point. Vedanta Sutra is breaking things down so that we can discern. Otherwise, then it things sound nice, so then we think that they are valid. But that's not the point. It actually has to be valid. So here is the reason we even attribute the positions that we do to anything is because of its connection to the Lord, the potency that the Lord has. That's the real thing. Right? It's not something else. Not that the jiva stands on their own, material energy stands on its own. Because then we're saying there's some reality. My conditioning has a reality to it. And because of that reality, therefore, you know, it's one reality and the other reality. But the point is the reality of whatever our position comes from the Lord Himself. Therefore, the only reason for something being engaged is for the Lord. So if there's nothing else available, you use whatever it is. But if something else is available, why you wouldn't use it? Right? If you don't see it, you're not aware because you're not so sophisticated, fine. Krishna's not going to worry about that. But if you're sophisticated, and so for yourself, you're very careful about all the little things, but for Krishna, then we claim this unsophisticated kind of position. That's cheating. That's what Rupa Goswami mentions in the Nectar Devotion. Or Prabhupada also, when he was talking about Archana. The wealthy person not doing opulent worship for Krishna, then there's a fault on their part. Is that as much? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like choosing tamagun for yourself instead of choosing
tamagun. No, tamagun for yourself, okay, if you like that. But to choose tamaguna for Krishna, that it's just as good as sattvaguna, that means you don't really know the philosophy. You can't tell the difference between the two. Where's the meaning of intelligence? Intelligence means to be able to tell the difference. You know? It means if you can only tell what's the same, nice. But if you can't tell the difference, that's not complete intelligence.
But even you couldn't even say you use tamaguna for yourself, and
it was just a point of discussion. Okay. You want to, you know, for yourself.
There is no for yourself.
Yes, that's there. There is no for yourself. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Okay. I therefore meditate upon Him, Lord Sri Krishna, who is eternally existent in the transcendental abode, which is forever free from the illusory representations of the material world. I meditate upon Him, for He is the absolute truth. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.12.11. What then is the ultimate truth? The answer is that non-dual knowledge is the ultimate truth. It is devoid of the contamination of material qualities. It gives us liberation. It is the one without a second, all-pervading and beyond imagination. The first realization of that knowledge is Brahman. Then Paramatma, the Supersoul, is realized by the yogis who try to see Him without grievance. This is the second stage of realization. Finally, full realization of the same supreme knowledge is realized in the Supreme Person. All learned scholars describe the Supreme Person as Vasudeva, the cause of Brahman, Paramatma, and others. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes.
When it says that the spiritual world is free from the contamination of material qualities, it means the modes.
Yes.
Because that's the ingredients.
It means that there's no material qualities. It only has spiritual qualities. But it's not necessarily mentioning it here, But the point is it says there's no material qualities. It didn't say there's no qualities. So that means there must be transcendental qualities.
And the difference would be just the notes between the two?
What you also have is yeah. You could say the modes. As long as you understand the modes means, you know, all the attachment, aversion, all these different kinds of things like that. Yeah, the whole package. So that's the whole point. If Krishna is not controlled by the modes, he's not under the modes. He's in control of the person who controls the modes. So therefore he can't be controlled by that person, nor be controlled by the modes. Sutra 113. So Jiva Goswami only wrote commentary on four verses.
He talks about the fifth one.
But I'm saying he wasn't attempting to do a full, so that's why there was a complaint. We don't have a full commentary,
yeah,
and therefore Baladev.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we were satisfied with what Jiva Goswami wrote, means for ourselves, but because other sampradayas are complaining, therefore the Govinda Basi
was a dispute in the
Yes. Okay. So then
they're questioning the position of Radha.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sutra 113. Shastra Yonitvat. The Lord cannot be known by reasoning because the source of understanding the Lord is the Upanishads.
And whose translation is
this? Is Jiva Goswami's.
Translation of Paramahansa
means whatever this is from.
No, the sutra itself. That's how it's translated everywhere.
Yeah, that's Govinda Bhashya translation.
Okay. That's
Govinda.
And Govinda Bhashya translation we're using.
Banamaj.
In general, if Banamaj has a translation that's available, we'll always use his, because he'll most clearly give the exactness in the philosophical understanding. He may not be the best in poetics. You know, that would be Gopi Purana Dana Prabhu. Like if you're doing a drama or something from Sanskrit, he'll do way better than anybody. But when it comes to exactness in the philosophical, then Banamars does the best. So for these studies, then we want that exactness. If we ever study Chaitanya Chandradoy Natakam, then we'll use Gopi Purana. Okay, commentary by Srila Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami comments on this sutra in the Paramatma Sandarbha. The way the individual spirit souls, or marginal potency, can understand the truth about the Supreme Lord is described in two statements of Vedanta Sutra, 1.1.3 and 4. The Supreme Lord is the author of all revealed scriptures, and all revealed scriptures are for knowing the Supreme Lord. That the Supreme Lord is the author of all revealed scriptures is confirmed by the words of the scriptures. So that's Tattu Samandaya.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. The first of these sutras is explained in this way. Why is it said that the Supreme is the original cause of the material universe's creation, maintenance, and annihilation? This question is answered by the word Shastaryonitvat, which means because the scriptures are the way to know the truth. Right? You know, we're used to these shorter, because most of the time people who translate, they try to keep them very short, you know, in the mood. But Jiva Goswami doesn't worry about those things. His point is it's better you understand what's going on than worry about the, you know, grammatical aspect of how nicely you made it short. Does that make sense? Yeah. Scriptural evidence for the truth that the Supreme Lord is the origin of material creation is found in these words of Taittiriya Upanishad 3.3.3.1.1. Yato va imani bhutani. The Supreme Absolute Truth is that from which everything is born. Unlike other philosophies, the philosophy of Vedanta does not accept logic as the best kind of evidence. In Vedanta Sutra 2.2.1.11, it is said, transcendental topics cannot be understood by argument or logic. Right? They have to be revealed through the scripture and from the spiritual master. That's how they're gained. Right? Because that's what it said right in the beginning. You have to approach the spiritual master. So, therefore, gaining knowledge has to be based on that. You have to inquire about the Supreme. You gain that from the spiritual master. All other details then within philosophy have to be gained from the spiritual master. By logic alone, you can't understand. We'll use logic to separate so we can tell the difference between what's proper understanding and improper understanding. Or to make a difference between various views of understanding. You know, in the Vichar, we look at it from different angles or different contexts. Does that make sense? So, that will use logic, but it's not that the logic itself will actually let you understand. That's the mistake of the materialistic intellectual. Right? The scholars, the scientists, the academics, they'll all think that because of my intelligence I can understand it. But actually it's not. It's because the Lord reveals. Why does He reveal? Because He's pleased with one's approach to the spiritual master and that sincere endeavor to understand. And where does it have to be based on? It has to be based on Shastra. So if one studies, it's not based on Shastra, why would the Lord be pleased? Right? So we can't say that, oh, but, you know, we're not used to these Vedic literatures and all that, and so why can't I just base my, you know, my relationship and philosophical understanding of the Lord and my relationship with Him and the creation, you know, on Harry Potter, you know, because that's what I grew up with, that's what I know, you know, and so like that. And, you know, they deal with all kinds of subtle things there, and it's not just all gross material, you know, stuff like that. There's a lot of metaphysical things there, and, you know, Hermione deals with time, you know, and all that kind of jazz. And so, you know, hey, you know, but that's not the way it works. It has to be based on the scriptures. And so then we're going to say is that it's going to be the philosophy has to be based on Upanishads. Because the Upanishads are the philosophical treatise on the Vedic philosophy. So Vedanta Sutra is then giving an understanding of that, a clarity to it. Because otherwise you won't, because you're hearing from the Guru, from Vyasadeva. Right? And then Gita is then based on the same thing, but here it's coming from Krishna Himself. Right? And then Bhagavatam is then based on the what's coming from Krishna, the Chaturshloki, and from the instructions of Narada, which has come from Brahma and Krishna, to Vyas. Right? So Vyasadeva has received the Chaturshloki from Brahma, who's got it from Krishna, and he's understood the position of Achinta Bheda Veda Tattva. From that meditation, then he's able to expand these four verses into the whole Bhagavatam. So we see it's always based on Upanishads. Does that make sense? That's where philosophy comes from. Right? So, you know, even though he's a nice guy, you know, we wish him well, but we will have to stick to the Upanishads, and we will not take Harry Potter as the spiritual authority. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. You have to be very, very careful. Yes?
Sometimes it's asked, where is the logic? If we follow that, we have to approach the spiritual master and we have to learn from him according to the Shastras.
Yes.
So where would be our logic acquired?
Meaning from what aspect?
It means
what's the approach to the question? What's the doubt? You're saying
the doubt?
You're saying you're using the approach there as your basically kind of example, but what's the actual doubt?
The doubt is that there is no freedom in actual logic because everything is kind of structured already.
Uh-huh.
That's the doubt.
So but just not just answering the question yet, just throwing out the position, but we're willing to accept modern academics, scientists, and philosophers, and other, you know, such individuals who have a voice in the modern media as authority and where we'll gain our knowledge from.
Out of habit.
Out of habit. So are we willing to give up that habit?
Hopefully in the process of approaching the spiritual master.
Yes, but the point is the anxiety is about freedom. So freedom, then how do you define freedom?
And this connection would be that you can avoid and it's not my question, so that's
not no, but it is your question.
No, I mean that was asked.
That's the someone else is asking.
Yeah,
but that's the basis
different.
Of their question is freedom. Okay, let's try an example. We're in prison, and the state has given directives that you follow, you know, the rules of the prison under the direction of the warden, and then you behave properly, then with time you'll get out of the prison. But then we will, by this logic that you've just presented, we're saying, where's the freedom in us having to follow the laws of the state as given by the warden? You know what I'm saying? So that's why I was asking about freedom, is that where is the freedom in material consciousness?
To be allowed to sit, mental speculation.
Yes, but then what's the result? We're not saying that you can't have mental speculation. This philosophy is for people who are tired of mental speculation. In other words, they've been through the gauntlet of karma and jnana, and they would like to move on to onto reality. Those who are attached to karma and jnana, they can dabble in devotional service, of course, and they'll definitely get benefit. Anything connected to the Lord is going to be beneficial. But if you want an actual full solution, then you have to follow the full program. And so if you want to maintain one's material independence, you can. There's unlimited living entities here. You know, so why should you be left out? Why would you be discriminated against that you also can't exercise your freedom? You know what I'm saying? You know, the mosquito is flying where he pleases. You know. So that's the whole point is that do we actually want a solution, or is it about ourselves and our own things? So if we're worrying about freedom. Now, what kind of freedom are we talking about? Is it freedom in action or freedom in thought?
In thought.
So therefore, then we're a jigyasu. And so we're only interested in just what little points are interesting to us, but actually surrendering, no. That's why you see the artha, artharthi, and jigyasu. They all are in a precarious position that they could easily go away. As soon as that there's no anxiety, one goes away. As soon as there's no, there's not a problem with money, one goes away. Or once answered one's whatever question one is interested in, then one could go away. Does that make sense? So it's only when you come to the platform of Jnani, then that you can say that's a solid neophyte. That he actually wants to know about the Lord and his relationship with the Lord. Though it's still not considered that mature, because he has to have knowledge, he has to know, yes, but it's about the Lord and their relationship with the Lord. And so he's willing to act within that. What you see is the jigyasu is not willing to work within it. They just want to ask when they want to ask and get the answers that they want to know, and they feel it's their right or their need. But it's not actually so much about the Lord. It's connected to the Lord, but it's not about the Lord. So we can see here is that it's not a devotionally strong platform. It's a very weak platform. But because it's connected to the Lord, we encourage. Because by the process of chanting, associating, taking prashad, then you see there's every chance that they'll switch from being a jigyasu into a jnani, then into a madhyamadhikari, and then progress from there. Yes.
My sense is that Shabda is connected to Shravana, Anuman is connected to Manana, and Satyakshi is connected to Nidhyabhyasa.
Satyakshi. But isn't pratyaksha the sensual?
Yes, correct.
Why would we connect pratyaksha to shabda? It would be the other way around. Yes, shabda anumana pratyaksha.
Shabda is connected to shravana.
To shravana.
Okay. That would be, you would progress that way, but it's not necessarily, because it only will work that way if you start from shravana. I mean, if you start from shabda. Then, through applying anuman as directed by the acharya, then you can perceive that knowledge with your senses. Right? You hear that the world is a place of birth and death, you know, old age, disease. So then you go out walking in the street and you see that around you. Right? That's what happened to, was it? Yeah. The Gautama. Right? That's what he saw. So then it becomes pratyaksha. But it's only because it's shabda. If you start with anuman or pratyaksha, you'll never get to that. So there'll be no realization. That's why we say is that only those actually on the platform of spiritual, following it properly from shabda, get realization. Others get understanding. In the modern academy, they don't make a distinction between realization and understanding. Even the jnanis don't make a distinction like that. They'll just think that when I'm more situated in it, I'm more mature, you know, I'm stable in it, then I have realization. So it's just that their understanding is more stable. So realization basically only means, in this case that we're talking about, the transcendental. You can, on the material platform, say yes, by doing things for a long time, and, you know, by the school of hard knocks, we get kicked around, so after a while you start to think about it. And then thinking about it, then applying it, then you get some some realization. But it's only valuable on the material platform. You know what I'm saying? Our father told us something and we don't accept because, you know, we're the rebellious teenager and we have to be independent and express. And by the time we're 30, then there's some realization. We figured out he was right all along. You know, we just wasted 15 years of our life. But a small price to pay for such a great realization. But here we're talking about transcendental. It has to come from authority. Right? Otherwise, how do people figure things out? Right? There's realization. Does that work? Yeah. But you have to be very careful. It has to be very clear that it's from there. Otherwise, then yes, the scientists would say, we can only realize things through observation of the senses. So that we don't accept. But getting to that point, you do, if it starts from shabda. And it's the shabda that you're actually able to see. Right? We're only using anuman because we can't see it. So we can see part of it. We see the shastra and we see what we're dealing with. But the connection between the shastra and what we're dealing with, that we haven't seen yet. Right,
Tom? How can you evaluate when we have sufficient shabda to go to the next level?
When we have insufficient.
Sufficient.
We have sufficient. Means then that means then there's manana. We contemplate what it's meaning, how it applies in our life, and then we try to apply it.
Yeah, but my question, Maharaj, is how we can evaluate where shabda. Where we can go from shabda to manana?
Where we can go, or what? Means you've heard anything, you can
when,
be applied.
When, sorry.
No, you've heard anything, you can apply it. That's the point. Is that because it's truth, it can always be applied, right? Especially the spiritual. The material, there may be you have to know a certain amount before you can do, but you can still apply what you know. But you may not be able to get the full aspect. You understand? The point is, because you're dealing with the absolute truth, everything about the absolute truth is also absolute. Right? 1 + 1 = 1, 1 - 1 = 1. Right? So I know any aspect of Krishna, I'm dealing with the absolute, so then I can get absolute realization from that. That's why it's mentioned in the Vedic verses that along with the verse, then it gives the saint who became perfect by studying that verse. So through that verse alone, or that group of verses, sometimes it's one verse, sometimes it's a group of verses, then a particular sage gained realization because he meditated just on that. So that's the point, is that because it's connected to Krishna, you can gain that. But on the material platform, unless you have the complete thing, you don't have anything. Right? You know, if I teach you how to make a chaunce, but nothing else than cooking, you still don't know cooking. Right? But if it's connected with what we're talking about, Krishna, then it becomes absolute, so then I can gain from that. So it's just a matter of, can that, is there some application in some way of the knowledge you have? So if it's spiritual, there always is. And if it's material, can that particular, that knowledge or that group of understandings, is there some application within something greater? You know, does that make sense? So that would be your breakdown into, okay, this body of knowledge is broken down into these parts. I'm studying part one. When I have that, I can do part one, but I can't do the whole thing. When I know two, then I add it, two, three, like this. So then there's practical application within that. That makes sense. Yeah.
I was going to say, there's a validity to this idea of the Shravana Manani Yasana corresponding to this number.
Okay.
Page 16, the original Upanishadic verse, actually.
Page 16.
Yeah, it translates, one should see this Brahman, hear about it, and think of it. One should know this Brahman. So that's the original Upanishadic reference to Shravana Manani Yasana. In the middle.
Oh, okay. The Atma Va. One should see this Brahman, hear about it, and think of it. For Maitreya, one should know this Brahman. Yeah. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. So that's because that concept of Shravana Mana and Nididhyasana is Upanishadic. So then this is your basis of that. So then, yes. But it has to be, you have to make sure you have all of it, that's all.
And the order is actually listed the way you mentioned it. In the,
yeah.
First hearing, then thinking, then thinking.
Yes. Then you can know. Right. So you'll see Brahman by hearing about it, thinking about it, and then you will then that realization that comes up. Then you can see. Because when Prabhupada talks about that the devotees, they see Krishna everywhere in everything, they actually do. It's not just that they're saying that. They see everything connected to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like someone has a particular interest in a particular subject very strongly, then wherever they go, whatever they're doing, they will see opportunities for that in whatever they're doing. You understand? So then, that's the same thing, is they see Krishna in everything. They see everything connected to Krishna. It's not that they necessarily see him, you know, standing under the bush playing the flute and winking at them, and then they turn over here and there he's over there with that. Not necessarily like that. You know, he may do that too if he likes, but the point is they can see how everything's connected to Krishna and how it can be used in Krishna's service. Does that make sense? So that's what you're trying to get to. Because if you take a mundane subject and bring it to that platform, it's still not enough. You may be very expert, you may be a master, but until you can see it's connected to Krishna, it's still useless. Because it's we become expert at something, how many times have we been like that? You know, if we've been Lord Brahma, you know, who's managing the whole universe, then being a manager on this platform, we've done that, you know, probably billions of times. You know, it's not a big accomplishment. You know what I'm saying? You know, just like saying, you know, oh, the spider climbed up the wall. Whoopee. You know, so that's what they do. You know. Is that okay? The Supreme is beyond the perception of the material senses. Therefore, material direct perception, other kinds of material source of knowledge are not helpful to understand Him. That is the meaning here, right? So, that we coming to that point means when you can perceive from the material senses, but you're not actually perceiving in the material senses. It's what you're perceiving in the material senses you're able to see in connection to Krishna. It's not that the material senses can ever perceive Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. That, That's the whole point. So unless, just like with Arjuna, Krishna says, I'll give you divine eyes, then he can see the universal form. But it's not that he's not seeing the form, but it's actually he has that divine vision that he can see that that's what's going on. Because otherwise the universal form, that's how everything's going on all the time. Right? And so, but one has to have that vision. So then Krishna gives that. So that's why he's beyond the perception of the material senses. So the perception, direct perception, other sources of material knowledge, those won't, so therefore pratyaksha and anuman, they will never let you know about the Supreme. And even you have shabda, unless you've heard it from authority, you still can't know the Supreme. Right? As far as we can understand is that when it comes to knowing the facts and figures of the scriptures, no one has said that Shanda and Umarka are deficient, but they can't see the Supreme. That's pointed out by Prahlad Maharaj. So all these ways of authority, of gaining knowledge, unless it's in connection with the spiritual master in parampara, then there can be no real knowledge. You can have knowledge, temporary knowledge of the world that will, be gone at some point. But the other aspect, then it has to be done through authority, because it's Krishna. That's the whole point. All knowledge is Krishna. Therefore, to understand it in connection with Krishna, it's only by Krishna's grace. That's why we can't depend upon ourselves, saying, no, but I'm used to it this way, I want to do it this way. But Krishna says that you can do that, but 7 billion people on this planet do that. What's the glory? What's the specialness? What's the uniqueness? What's the superiority? The specialness is that seeing it in connection with the Supreme, according to authority. Seeing like that, then Krishna will reveal. But just using logic and other things like that, that's not going to reveal anything. Does that make sense? So if that's very clear, then using that formula that you did, that's what we want to bring it to. In other words, when the student can actually see it for themselves, then you can say the teacher's training was complete. Especially the modern academy doesn't bother with that one. Mm-hmm. Like that, it's not about that. They just give the knowledge and take the money. Right, or even the fun, most fun part is they're working hard to give the knowledge. They're not even the ones getting the money. Some other guys sitting in the office, they're getting the money. Right, so it's not about that contemplation and application. Right, they say they're trying to make you think, but how much can you think about 20 novels in a 3-month course? There's not a lot of thinking there. In fact, there's a good chance that the student who got the A read every third word. They didn't even read the whole book. Or, what's his name? Clive.
Cliff.
By the glories of association with Cliff, then they are able to come to great, great heights of understanding. Yes.
But Prabhupada does this one, as a leader stated, to
you're asking a question or you're making a comment?
It's not like you have material senses. At the same time, he wasn't in the spiritual world, he was in the material world, because the past time he was described.
No, but since when is he ever, Raghunath Das, ever in the material world? Okay. Point is, as it said, Raghunath Das and Rupa Goswami, they were always Nitya Siddhants. They weren't conditioned jivas who then came to the platform of prema. Like that. Those two, they were always on that platform. So they may perform pastimes here, but they're never here. Yes. So that's what I'm asking. Well, you were making a comment, just showing him as an example of what we discussed. Okay. Yes. No, that's fine. Thank you. Okay, we'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki
Jai
Jainata Gaura Premanandi ki